Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Happy Tuesday and welcome to Global Leader Radio. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. We achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways, including resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests, and we got a couple of great ones here today. Today's topic is centered on what executives learn from the Executive MBA at KSU. So with that overview, we welcome our guests Mark Kill and Carrick Shanahan. Mark Kill serves as Cooper Carey's Chief Operating Officer. Cooper Carey is a national firm offering architecture, environmental graphic design, interior design, landscape architecture, and planning / sustainability consulting services. So prior to joining Cooper Carey, Mark was a partner at THW Design, where he specialized in commercial, hospitality, senior living, and transportation projects. Mark's area of expertise is in team-oriented project programming, documentation, coordination, delivery, and management. That sounds pretty technical. I'm telling you, boy, that's...
It's a pea soup of activities for sure.
Got it. Mark received his Bachelor of Science in Architecture from The Ohio State University and his MBA in 2009 from KSU's Executive MBA program. Mark has an impressive list of credentials and certifications related to his field. And also, Mr. Carrick Shanahan has agreed to join us today. He's the director of the global PMO for Experis. Experis is part of the Manpower Group of companies and provides professional services in IT, engineering, accounting, and finance. Carrick's career spans from being an entrepreneur to working 18 years for a Fortune 10 company. And I'm going to guess which one that was.
Not too hard, is it?
And not too hard. So Kerry graduated from Wake Forest University, if I'm not mistaken. CP3 is a graduate there, Chris Paul?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and where he majored in economics and French. So Kerry earned his master's in business administration from KSU's Executive MBA program in 2003. So given that overview, we welcome both Mark and Kerry to today's edition of Global Leader Radio. So gentlemen, how are you today?
Doing awesome. Glad
Fantastic.
To be here.
Fantastic. Thanks, Alvin.
Doesn't get any better than this, does it?
No, it
does not.
So, Mark, let's begin with you, if you're okay with that, Kerry.
Absolutely.
Okay. So to begin with, please give us an insight on Mark Kill, the man behind the leader. Give us a little insight on your original birthplace, home, a bit about your work experience, and bring us up to the present.
Sure. Well, I can go back a long time where my parents absolutely influenced me a great deal. My mom was an educator and sort of a self-taught interior designer and artist. And she did a great job with seven of us. So she had the right brain thinking in the family. And my dad was a mechanical engineer by training, an Illinois Institute of Technology grad. Where Mies van der Rohe was the chair of the architecture department a little bit after my dad was there. So he's all about the analytics and the left brain world of big time large company management. He was a car guy for most of his career. So that's kind of my balance. That's my nature. Part.
The whole brain family, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, large family, we got in and worked with one another and teamed and fought and had conflict, but, you know, really enjoyed one another's company, and mom and dad ensured that, you know, we made it through that hole. So.
Good point. So are all seven of you are in the Atlanta area or no?
Five out of seven. Still have a sister in the Cleveland, Ohio area. I grew up in Cleveland, was born in Detroit, Michigan, and a brother in Detroit. But five of us are in the Atlanta area, and it's a joy and a blessing to have that, those resources close by and that connectivity. It's fabulous.
Well, good. I know we talked about the fact that you're the COO of Cooper Carry, and that prior to joining Cooper Carry, you were a partner at THW. Can you perhaps go back a little bit further and kind of give us a feel for your progression in terms of work?
Sure.
Or career, rather?
Yeah. Graduating from OSU, it was a pretty large school and obviously a large university, and was fortunate to secure a position right after graduation with an E&A firm, a firm called H.K. Ferguson Company, who did predominantly Busch breweries back in the 70s. So they had a long credential of that type of facilities work, and then was fortunate to secure a position at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill in Chicago, Illinois. SOM doesn't require a great deal of introduction in the professional design world. Fabulous place. Really cut my teeth there on a great many large commercial projects. Mm-hmm. And the schedules were fast. The hours were long. The interaction among teammates and firm leadership was robust. We just were dry sponges absorbing a great deal of information. Then had an opportunity to come to Atlanta. My siblings were kind of migrating here and decided to join them in 1986, and was actually at Cooper Carry for 5 years before the kind of developmental downturn, economic downturn in the late 80s, early 90s, and went to THW Design to work on Delta Airlines. Am I allowed to say some of these names?
Absolutely.
I just want to check. So worked on their facilities expansion at the Northern Kentucky Cincinnati International Airport. So talk about a great deal of moving parts on that project. It was a all told $320 million at that time. Our construction portion of it, the design for which we were responsible, was about $120 million. So learned a great deal about more large projects and really getting those implemented and online. And then did some Crown Room Club redevelopment globally for Delta Airlines, and met other teammates, other professional design service providers in the UK, in Germany, and the like, and that was a fabulous experience. And then went on to senior living design. And
is that assisted living?
It's more than that. It's the continuum of care where we have seniors, and they enjoy the robust lifestyles and almost kind of resort lifestyles. And as they age in place, depending on the person, there are a variety of directions that can go, Alvin. Assisted living and a variety of levels of skilled care. So the learning in all of that was very deep, and again, it's sponge-like activity. Mm-hmm. So here we are kind of 35, 37 years into this, and there's still a great deal of learning.
Interesting. So as you talk through this, what it made me wonder is, how do you approach this depending on the facility? Do you have to put yourself in the mindset of the individual who either may occupy or is currently occupying it? How does that work?
Kind of walk us through that. Great question, because there are the kind of the overseers and the leaders and guiders of that process, and then there are actually the end users of the buildings that we design. So it's and in that case, that's a two-prong sort of mechanism. Mm. In the world of senior living, it was kind of four-pronged. There were the residents themselves, the staff who contribute a great deal in the care of those residents. It's the families of the residents. And then there are this team leadership and facilitation group that kind of brings these projects online. So, yes, we have to do a great deal of listening and deep listening, active listening on a variety of levels with a variety of groups to get these large, complex projects really teed up well. Yeah. It's fascinating. Yeah. It really is.
It certainly sounds like it. And obviously, there's quite a bit of project management that goes into that.
Oh, you bet.
And even though I realize that as you're sitting here now, I did not anticipate that when we actually put you two together as guests on today's show. And so with that, it's almost a perfect segue into introducing Carrick Shanahan. So Carrick, the director of the global PMO with Experis. Kind of talk a little bit about the man behind, actually, the man behind Mr. Shanahan.
All right, we'll do, Al. So I think when Mark was introducing himself, some parallels here in our lives. I come from a family of 9 children.
Oh, wow.
And at one point, 3 of my sisters lived here. So we had, you know, Atlanta became a little mecca for our family as well. Come from a very educated family. My father had his PhD in microbiology, which he got at the University of Illinois.
So fantastic.
Wow.
Interesting little connections as he was talking through. So maybe we're related somewhere along the way here. Who knows? But and my mother was actually just about a summer school shy of completing her PhD, too.
Wow.
And their parents were educated, and they both come from Irish Catholic families from way back on both sides, so very strong values from a religious standpoint, from a country standpoint, family, focusing on career, getting educated. So very, very important to us and our family to focus on those things. So it wasn't even an option growing up that, we wouldn't be educated and do something. So when, I told my dad that I wanted to go to Wake Forest, fortunately he could do it at that time. He put 8 of us through college.
Wow.
He and my mother did, I should say.
And a couple of you were there at the same time.
Oh, yeah, they had 3 in school at one time. And some big schools like Villanova, Notre Dame. So there's some pretty quality schools in the family, too. And about half of us have gone on to other degrees. But one of my sisters just got her doctorate about a year ago. So it's one thing that the program taught us at KSU was that lifelong learning. And that's always been one of our family's goals, too, is to continue to learn throughout life. You can't stop. Particularly in today's environment.
Particularly in today's environment, that is correct. So tell us a little bit about your work experience.
So out of Wake Forest, being an economics major, most people tend towards banking and insurance, and that didn't seem too exciting to me at the time. So had an opportunity to get into it's now Macy's. It was Riches for all the longtime Atlanta people who remember Riches. They had an executive training program. Mm-hmm. Was able to enter that. It was kind of interesting. My teammates, if you will, were all fashion merchandising majors and things like that, that kind of knew that side of the house. And here I was, this economist coming in there. But so definitely a lot of on-the-job training for me to figure it out. And I chose the route of going into the stores.
Okay.
And because I knew you could be a manager right away. And I liked that aspect, being right out of college, managing a couple $1 million worth of merchandise, teams of people. It was a smaller store, too. So I had opportunities to really shine.
Nice.
Killer hours, you don't make squat for money, that's for sure. But as I look back, one thing, Alvin, in my career, every step along the way, I've been able to point to what I do today as an important stepping stone. I went from Riches. There was an executive at Riches that left that started a franchise business. So I said, well, I'm young, I'm not married. It's not a great deal of money to get involved. So I jumped into the entrepreneurial world. Had my own business for a couple of years, that little recession of 91 and the first Gulf War and all that came along kind of killed.
I remember that one.
Yeah, I bet. it hit small businesses, which is what we were targeting particularly hard. And, but I called it, before I got my real MBA, I used to call it my MBA of hard knocks.
Yes.
Because I wasn't real well capitalized, let's say. So, I did some odd jobs here and there to help
to
pay the rent.
And, yeah.
But at the same time, I look back and it was actually a good period in my life in a lot of ways. I had good friends and my life wasn't impacted too hard, but very good lessons learned for me. But I realized, the corporate world, there's some good benefits to being in that. Through one of my sisters, had a connection at Bell South Mobility.
Okay.
So this is early 1991 time frame. So wireless is, you know, really just starting to take off. I mean, these are bag phones and cars installed. I'm sure there's some people probably listening that never even seen those.
Well, that was a luxury back then to have a bag phone. That was pretty expensive, too.
It was. So if I hadn't been an employee, I know I wouldn't have had one. And so I went into customer operations there and worked in a call center type environment, you know, sort of a little bit of gut check for me, sort of started over 4 years after school a little bit. But, you know, I liked the industry. You're part of a big company and it would things just boomed. You know, I know you were at the company, not on the wireline side, but I'm sure you heard all the rumblings from down the road what was happening on the wireless side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's fantastic. Tell us a little bit about Experis and kind of the link between them and Manpower and, and some of the verticals where you operate as a company.
Sure. So Experis, that brand is relatively new in the marketplace. It's only about 2 years old. It's a combination of experience and expertise. So the marketing geniuses that we hired came up with Experis. And, you know, fortunately, Experis.com and all those things you have to worry about when you pick a name these days all worked out. So we're owned by a Manpower Group. A lot of people might be familiar with Manpower. I mean, a lot of people say, I had my first job with them as a temporary worker somewhere in light industrial, clerical type of stuff. And that's still the lion's share of the business. We're a $22 billion business globally. We have brick and mortar operations in 82 countries around the world.
Okay.
And I was brought in 4 years ago when the woman that hired me, Jill Harlemart, she came from ComSys, so used to be one of my vendors when I was at Bell South.
Okay.
And Experis ended up acquiring ComSys a couple years ago. It's a kind of interesting mix, all the people in my prior life came back around.
Together, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, but we focus on providing workforce solutions. I think that's the easiest way to describe what we do.
Okay.
It's in the IT world, it's in engineering, accounting, and finance, none of which I have any expertise in. But it's my role is really not to have the expertise in that. As I like to say, I'm the bridge between the business and the technology and figuring out how to do that. And one of the missing pieces that Experis had in the past, there wasn't a way to connect the U.S. with our other 81 countries around the world.
Wow.
So I've spent the last 4 years figuring out how to do that, driving the people at the corporate office in Milwaukee crazy because we've created totally new ways of doing things, you know, figuring out how we can bill and invoice and not only each other, but help our clients. You know, can we consolidate bills for our clients in different currencies and present them one bill in U.S. dollars? That's something that seems rather easy on the surface, but you can get yourself in a lot of trouble if not done right.
And so, most large companies have to struggle with that at some point.
Exactly. No. So, you know, I'm able to, in my job now, the bids that we work on, in fact, I was working on one on riding in the car on the way here, putting a small call center operation together in India. But some of the questions and things that we have to ask the client in doing this, you know, I go back to my call center days when I was had a headset on, and then, you know, I moved into a management role and actually rolled out email and click to chat. So some of the Web 2.0 type technologies. And learning how to staff and do all that kind of stuff, you know, that I did, you know, 15, 20 years ago is actually a great benefit today.
Exactly.
I have a lot of credibility, you know, saying that I've done that job. I know what it takes to do that and, you know, how we can make it easier, but at the same time, cost effective.
Yeah.
You know,
so how much of your day is virtual?
100%.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. So, when I did the AT&T Bell South executive program, they didn't have the international component.
That's right.
They carved it out to save a little money, and fortunately, within the last or the couple years after, they opened it up and allowed alumni of the program to basically audit that course. I think Alvin, you did the same thing, and so I did the trip to Romania, and the whole premise of that trip was really to learn how to team virtually. Mm-hmm. So that was, I think, in. That was 7 years ago I did that.
Okay.
And I remember my wife asking me, you know, why are you doing this?
Why go back?
You just want to go to Romania. I'm like, well, that's pretty cool, too. Or, you know, Romania is definitely a unique place. But
it is.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
And in fact, still keep up with some of the people that we met over there. And but that's exactly what I do every day today. I have a team of people that literally circles the globe from China to India to the Czech Republic to Ukraine and Colombia, as well as the U.S. I have people working for me. So, it,
so as long as the sun is up.
Yeah, we're somewhere doing
you're
something.
You're somewhere doing something.
Exactly. But it's all conference calls. We use the heck out of Skype.
Yeah.
Power user of Skype. And other, you know, we have some internal tools inside the company that are available too, like WebEx. Obviously, we use that quite a bit too. So.
Oh, well, very good. Well, I will actually pause with you real quickly, and I'll pivot back over to Mark. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about some of the verticals where Cooper Carries operates as a company, and maybe even someone who are the ideal clients of Cooper Carry.
Well, we have 12, 13, 14 specialty practice groups, and those are really market sectors or project types. And we like our young people to come into the firm and have a broad experience about professional design services, and I'll use architecture because I am an architect. But when I say architecture, I also mean landscape architecture, interior design, environmental graphics, and urban and regional planning.
So it's more of a catch-all than people realize.
Yeah, so. It is, and not to be confused with IT architecture, because you know, there's some who've glommed onto that.
Yeah, no, so those guys will fight you tooth and nail on that for sure.
Yeah. And you know, interestingly enough, before you move on, you are the one of the few people I've ever met, actually know personally, that has more initials after their name than they have in their name.
Get out of town.
I'm telling you, man.
Stop it.
You're impressive.
Just stop it.
But yeah,
I try not to do that.
Oh, no.
But we have an office and corporate group. We have a transit and transit-oriented development group. We get out and talk to those people as often as we can, mm-hmm. on panels and doing events like this. We have a very robust educational section. We've done our share of work up at KSU and mm-hmm. Southern Poly and Georgia State and UGA and the like. So the Board of Regents of the University System of Georgia and the GSFIC and the Adult Technical College System of Georgia are good clients of ours.
Yes.
Yeah. We are at the table competing for professional service wins routinely with all of those folks. We have a retail studio. We have interior design and landscape architecture, certainly. And our landscape architecture planning group is unique in that we call it the center, and we do a variety of pursuits, LCIs, TDIs, various urban planning projects. We know all of the jurisdictions nearby. We have a very robust hospitality group and conference center practice.
How many of your projects actually take advantage of all of those practices?
Well, that's called mixed use, and we have a mixed use and residential group, and that is the beauty, Carrick and Alvin, of the way the firm is designed. It's a connective practice, and when an owner client visits us with the vision, and I believe that great projects are begotten by fabulous project visionaries, and that's on the owner's side as much as the design side, because they have to have that vision and awareness and gumption to want to really get it done and assemble this great team. So we're able to leverage that internally when it consists, the project consists of retail and a hotel and conference center and a lifestyle experience, which is a kind of a retail world there, and residential, we're able to deliver that from within our practice. So
interesting.
It's very helpful. Very helpful.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, so LCIs and TDIs, help me with those two acronyms.
They're urban pursuits.
Okay.
He's not allowed to tell you that.
Okay, you can't tell me. We can't demystify that one, right?
Taxed initiative districts.
Okay. Like empowerment zones and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. So the COO of Cooper Carry, what do you do with regard to the way the company is organized? Do you get involved in that piece of it for some reason if you're not organized correctly or you're not taking advantage of a vertical in a certain way?
Yeah.
Is that part of what you do?
Yeah, I'm responsible with a couple of other principals for our staffing profile, recruitment and retention, and certainly work with our human resources group to that end. So I'm not dissimilar from you, Carrick, in many ways, in that I feel like I am a bridge or act as a bridge between the professional technical design service teams and the support teams in the business office, accounting and finance, human resources, our information technology group, our administrative group, and risk management and our internal corporate counsel. So I participate with them on many levels in ensuring that the right people are in the right places for the right times and are bringing the appropriate talent sets to the projects that are online and need to be delivered. And it's very interesting in that they're given these various practice groups, which are almost like small offices unto themselves, to get the staff to cross-pollinate and learn widely and broadly prior to, we call it, declaring a major, where you're going to be a hospitality architect or you're going to be a science and technology architect or an office building architect, because they have very different kind of proscriptive formulas that they have to follow. Now, is there the creative part of all that? Certainly. But there are basic tenets that require attention.
Especially regulations, perhaps.
Absolutely. Right. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. No question.
Okay. Well, great. I'm glad you took a minute and kind of helped us with that. So, Carrick, I'd love to ask you the $58 million question.
Uh-oh.
Exactly what is a PMO?
A PMO. That's one of those terms that can be interpreted very broadly, Alvin. So generally within most corporations, you'll have that stand for program management or project management office. Companies that are large enough to have programs, you know, like an AT&T, even within their IT structure, let's say, that's what I'm most familiar with, will have various programs they might align under networking and engineering and customer operations.
Okay.
So there would be IT programs related to each of those towers or verticals within the business.
So it's a series of projects that lead to a larger program.
Yeah, they might call that a portfolio of projects. So on the project level, that's more of a one-to-one.
Okay.
And then a senior project manager might have multiple projects that they're managing called a portfolio, and a portfolio might roll up under a broader program.
Okay.
So different ways you can slice it and dice it, but in general, that just means the body of the organization that coordinates the projects.
Okay.
The world that I live in isn't necessarily project driven per se, but it's kind of a good catch-all. People seem to understand if say, "Well, I'm part of the global PMO." They know that they come to us to make things happen.
You got it.
with our sister companies around the world. So.
But project managers do fall in beneath your purview.
Yes. Yeah, okay. In my world, we call them engagement managers.
Engagement managers,
but we
okay.
do put them all through the PMI training course and become hopefully PMI certified. It's a tough designation. So I've got a couple little letters after my name, too, Mark. Probably not as many as you, but PMI is a certification program for project management. You know, project management means a lot of things to different people.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm marked by the world that you live in, with very project driven. So, you know, you have to, if you approach things from the same way, if people are speaking the same language, particularly with our larger customer, the IBM's a significant customer of ours, and all their project managers have to be PMI certified. So we go in and we're speaking the same language right off the gate with them to level set when we kick things off.
Well, fantastic. We're talking with Mr. Mark Kill. He's the COO of Cooper Carry, a large architectural firm located in Atlanta, and Kerrick Shanahan, the director of the global PMO for Experis, which is a division of Manpower?
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic. So having both these gentlemen in today to talk about the executive's view of why an executive MBA was important, and certainly how it has been able to be used by you throughout your tenure in your corporations and the kind of value you were able to bring to them. We were just setting kind of the foundation of the men behind the leadership and what they do today and what they're responsible for as well. So since you're responsible for the global PMO, Kerrick, can you give us a few of what project management looks like from the global perspective?
Right. Well, fortunately, you might call it the second universal language, maybe, Alvin, that's out there from a, you know, the methodology that you want to put to that is pretty straightforward.
Okay.
You know, you want to initiate and plan and execute and follow up and close and all those good things that come along with basic project management. So if I'm hiring somebody in the U.S. or Australia or the U.K. or wherever, when you look at their resumes, it's pretty easy to tell, you know, if they've followed, if they understand those programs, you know, if they're already certified, that's great. There's some other thing. There's another one called PRINCE2 that's out there. Okay. It's more known on the international level. But if they've had some sort of grounding in some basic project management methodology, that helps. And that just helps level set. So, you know, if you're looking at a project schedule, you know, dates and times, that's pretty universal too.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, you know, as long as everyone can speak the same language, you know, when you're talking, fortunately, you know, English, largely we require our executives and the senior people in all our offices around the world to speak English. So
okay,
that helps tremendously. But, you know, as one thing that we work with our clients when they want particularly specialized project managers, like let's say it's, you know, in the financial world or something, okay, there's a big SAP system upgrade and you need someone that speaks the local language and English, you know, your price just went way up. We see that particularly out in Brazil, you know, because they speak Portuguese down there versus Spanish. So it's little things like that that I've learned a lot over the last 4 years, and I help communicate to our clients as to the challenges that they're going to face. Because I think within in any project, your risks are your biggest factor. The other stuff, you know, you just kind of figure what your end game is and work backwards to figure out how to get there.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It's that risk register that really can be your most important thing, and not just worry. Oh, don't say, I'll worry about it when I get there. your customers don't want to hear that.
Do you have any stakeholding events or processes before you really get going and plan your project about, you know, what's in it for me? What do you hope to have from this outcome? Because we all view these things very differently.
So there's two ways we do that. One is contractually through a statement of work. I mean, so we try to be as detailed as we can there because we're the ones paying the people. And a lot of times people are paying us, you know, there's two ways. Either we call it time and materials, an hourly basis, or a set fee.
Okay.
Those are the two things that we work from. So, you know, we know what our revenue and what our margin needs to be. So we have to work into that. On the other side, you know, in having those stakeholder meetings, particularly when you kick off, because a lot of times it's the salespeople, right, that have put these things together, not ragging on the salespeople.
You got to have salespeople.
We have great ones.
Absolutely do.
In our company, and I'm joined at the hip with them, but I'm that jump-off point. Mm-hmm. In fact, earlier this morning, we were working on an internal document that actually shows that flow of what the customer's responsibilities are, what the sales responsibilities are, what my team does, what our back office people, and lays it out in sort of that swim lane type of diagram now that customers really seem to appreciate. And they say, oh, I get it now. Because you want to show like where the salespeople fade to black a little bit, you know, and that let delivery take over, and then you own that relationship with the customer. And then what we do is, you know, we put our consultant hats on. I'm sure like you guys do, Mark, and say,
we do.
Wouldn't it be good if we did it? It's not in the contract, right? But, you know, do we want to, you know, particularly add this component to it? Or
I've seen a little bit of that, Karen.
I would imagine so.
Well, I mean, that brings up a great question. In your world, Mark, do you utilize project managers, or do you expect that the people who work with you have project management skills? How does that work?
Well, you know, that was actually part of my returning to school, and the executive program was to try to be that liaison between our practice is kind of subdivided into a three-legged stool. It's great design, you know, that you have to have the fabulous, exciting, meets the needs aesthetically, pleasing and functional kind of result. You have to have the building science to support that design. It's got to be watertight and warm in the winter and cool in the summer and satisfy and have the lights go on and off when you need for them to do so.
And still be aesthetically pleasing.
And still be aesthetically pleasing. Then there's that third part called project management that kind of guides the project teams, and that's the owner team. We have internal teams. We have a broader external team where we have our engineering consultants, structural engineers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, fire protection, and the list goes on depending on the project's complexity. And then we have a broader contracting team and the contractor and his suppliers and subcontractors and vendors, and certainly glued together by the owner.
Those are very different skills.
Oh,
absolutely. I mean, there's project managers that know how to deal with contracts, and then there's project management that know how to deal with the client.
So and
we have that, like the people that work for me, and we call them those engagement managers, are critical because they become the go-to point for our clients. So they don't necessarily have to go to the individual people or practices. It's, you know, we insulate our people and insulate the client from having to figure out who to talk to.
Right. And that's a good formula, really good. So then in the project management side, there's also a sliver of kind of firm and corporate leadership and management. So it's design, it's technology, and when I say technology, building science and technology, and project management and firm leadership, really. And just because we are kind of inherently right-brained people in this profession, we really gravitate toward, you know, first question upon graduation, what do you want to be in 5 years? Well, I want to be the designer of the coolest project out there. So it's really design and right brain centric. So that was my charge, was to get a little more, you know, kind of whole brain thinking about that. And we had some great acumen and experiences in the program that brought that to me personally, and I hope that I'm bringing to our firm.
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk about as we move through this. Were you the CEO of Cooper Carey when you entered the executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University?
COO.
COO.
Yes,
I was. Yeah. Okay, so why primarily did you go back to school? Was it to bring the acumen?
Yes.
Just simply for that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Because we
love to do great design solutions. We love to have those relationships with our owner clients. We love to deliver those fabulous services. Watching how much time that it takes to do so, watching the finances of doing so, watching some of the kind of behind the curtain activities, support activities, to ensure that that happens.
It's got to be fun, but it's got to be profitable.
In many cases, we weren't as concerned about those kinds of things. So I'm trying to bring that awareness and acumen to that. Now, you get in the program, and September of 2008 rolls around, and it's like, holy smokes, you know, mm-hmm. this is a whole different deal, and it wasn't necessarily growth or expansion or any of those kinds of things, new markets. It was kind of survival. So that was a real deal changer mm-hmm. in our profession mm-hmm. and within the construction industry. So, you know, it was challenging, still challenging.
Okay.
We're working through it.
Well, and that's important. You're still in the game.
Yeah,
so
you've
got,
right.
you got to stay alive, right? Yeah. There you go. So, Carrick, I'm going to ask you the same question. Were you the director of the global PMO at the time?
I was not.
Okay.
I was a middle manager at what was Bell South at the time, working in the – they called it the E-Store. And one of my bosses there had just finished a program, Doug Barnes.
Okay.
And he said, you need to do this. And he was right. As I was trying to progress through the Bell South ranks and then even in the AT&T, you pull up jobs that were posted and – usually the last thing would always say, MBA preferred, MBA yes. preferred.
Yeah.
I got really tired seeing that and just knowing if that's a differentiator, you know, all things being equal, then, you know, the nod's probably going to go to the MBA guy. So just jumped in. You know, I had a little baby at home and a, you know, 4 or 5 year old daughter too, and said, just need to do this. And, you know, you look back now, I don't know how I did it. They stretched it out a long time. It took 2.5 years.
Yeah, at the time.
Back then to
yeah.
do
at
it.
That time.
So we had some breaks in there, but we actually had some pretty interesting seminal moments that happened. 9/11 happened about 2 months into our program. So that gave a lot of fodder for discussions
wow.
and, you know, handling.
Push things in perspective. From
absolutely.
Our perspective.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we had someone pass away. Mm. One of our classmates pass away. One of the space shuttles, I'd always remember, it was a Challenger or Columbia, but blew
exploded,
up.
Exploded.
And for those of you in the program, there's a case study. I don't know if you guys did that, Mark, in your class or not, but we did a case study on, I believe it was quality control on the talking about the O-ring.
The O-ring.
Yeah, we did the Harvard business. So, you know, when you look back, you're like, wow, I had some, you know, not only was I, you know, taking stuff back to work every day, but there were some, you know, big life events mm-hmm. happening that really were transformational in the big picture of things and just the technology that everything that has just changed in those past 12 years is pretty phenomenal. So, I feel very fortunate to have been part of the program. I've tried to stay connected to the program. I've been a coach. I was, mm-hmm. you know, a big part of the Kennesaw program is the coaches that get assigned. Do they still do individuals and team, or is it
absolutely? Okay. You're sitting next to one now.
All right. Well, good deal. So I was actually, I think, one of the pioneers. I think I was one of the very first when we first started doing that for the teams and then the individuals, and. Now, as Alvin knows, I actually go back and I teach the project management module.
Oh, you do? Great.
Yeah, third semester, summer semester.
Coming up June, this first Sunday in June, I'll be back doing that. So, you know, it's also taught me how to give back, too, which I think is a valuable component of this program.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to stay connected. You know, what a great network that you've built out.
So it really is.
Enjoy, you know, the lessons and leadership things and the golf outings and all the fun things that we do to stay connected, because it's all, you know, it sounds kind of trite, but you really do have to keep your networks built up, you know, whether you're, you know, part of your own company or, you know, when you still have 15, 20 years or how many left years in your career.
Correct.
You need that strong network out there to help you. So
have you seen it, gentlemen, where people wait till the last minute to really concern themselves with a network? And then they get caught in a situation where it's do or die job-wise, and they start scrambling around and saying, hey, remember me? I need to go and talk to you. Yeah. And
I think social media has helped change that. You know, people are so used to Facebook, you know,
sure.
or Instagram. And so the we'll call them the quote, the kids of today, they know how to connect on that level, but then teaching them how to do it on a different level.
Personal one-to-one.
Yeah. Shake hands. Eye-to-eye contact.
Get to know people beyond the superficial level.
Written thank you notes. That's
yes.
when I drive home with my own daughters. I'm like, I can send an email. I say, no, you're going to sit down with a paper and pen. because you will not. People will always remember that.
Yeah, and people still do that, huh?
Apparently, well, my kids do. I tell you that, and I do it.
It's a great practice. I do too.
Yep. So there's something that should hopefully never go away. Those little personal touches, with project management, all the technology. I'm sure, the advances in all the CAD systems and everything in your world, Mark, are just amazing. But it's still the person that has the mouse in their hand.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
That makes all the difference. Just like the project manager that's sitting down in front of Microsoft Project or one of the other programs out there and mm-hmm. plugging that in and making this work.
Yeah, and CAD stands for computer aided design, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's
correct.
I really made
myself a concerted effort to really focus on the acronyms and try to help to demystify that for our audience today.
You were a good student a few weeks ago when you were at our office, Alvin.
I paid attention. So both of you have stayed connected to the program through coaching. Can you tell us first of all what that means? And I know you gave us some of your insights, and then number two, how you learned to do it, and you gave us some of your insights there too, Carrick. And then third, how it becomes a strength back at the workplace.
Well, the satisfaction that I get from doing it is to, as Carrick says, to give back, and I really like to see the teams that I coach succeed and watch them develop and really change and have an awareness of themselves and their teammates and what's being asked of them and the expectation of the high standard of deliverable that's required. So that is very satisfying. You know, selfishly, it's very satisfying to mm-hmm. me. The acumen certainly was developed just during the course of the program. And upon graduation, I went back and took a Saturday, certified managerial coaching credential.
Right.
And that just drove more of that workplace interaction home. Our firm has a tagline, the Center for Connective Architecture. So we're about connections, project connections, and people connections. So the coaching and the connectivity there is very important to me. And then lastly, just bringing it home, bringing it to the workplace from home every Monday morning is kind of that's a challenge to do. It's exciting to be able to do it. You have to be cognitive of the selection process and, okay, this is where we're going to go with this. And, quite frankly, sometimes are more successful than other times.
Yeah.
But you have to kind of step out there and put yourself out there and be a risk taker to a degree in order.
And a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. Aspects, absolutely. The transparency, vulnerability, authenticity of those things. And I think it helps the situation become more real, mm-hmm. and there's a great deal to learn about it.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. So, Carrick, tell us a little bit about how this coaching becomes a strength at the workplace.
Well, particularly for me, it's a challenge. Like I said, I have
virtual.
A virtual team. Yep. So, and as we all move along in our careers, you go from you start managing managers too,
mm-hmm.
right? And as we were talking a little earlier for the show, we're managing people far away that you've never met, right? That it's all virtual, and but figuring out how to coach them as a team, but then individually too. I think that's one of the takeaways that I brought from being a coach.
Okay.
Was and then being a leader in general is that one size doesn't fit all. Some people you can just put them in the boat and push them out, and just tell them to send up a flare every now and again, and they're perfectly happy with that. And then there are people that you need to call them every day,
mm-hmm.
or send them a note or send them an IM or something. Hey, how's it going? Just shoot the bull with them, ask them how the wife and kids and that kind of stuff are doing. So what I've tried to learn over time is figure out the personality of each of those people, mm-hmm. When to bring them together as a team, which can be very challenging to do versus all the time zones. And I've learned you just don't bring people together for the sake of meeting. You know, right. If you don't have anything important to say, just cancel the meeting. We're not, or say, guess what, guys, this is a 5-minute meeting. You know, but then figuring out how to get people to understand each other's cultural differences too.
Okay. How do you do that?
Mostly just tell them.
Okay.
You know, so for instance, I have a couple new people starting. I work very closely with India. I've traveled there several times now, spent a lot of time in country, have my own engagement manager there. So I've really picked up on their norms and their customs. And, you know, unlike Americans, you know, we pop up and we're at work at, 7 in the morning and we're okay with that, or, take calls or whatever. You know, you suggest that in India.
It's not a good thing.
They're not going to be there. But if they want to stay 8 o'clock at night and be hammering stuff mm-hmm. around the table, they're okay with mm-hmm. that. And, mm-hmm. Then you'll go out to dinner and, that's perfectly acceptable to them, and that's the way they'd prefer to do it.
Hmm.
So, as I tell people, you need to talk to so-and-so in India. And, oh, by the way, here's the best time to call them.
Okay.
This is the ideal time. You might need to – it's 7:30 in the morning for you, but – that's the ideal time. It's not, late in our normal workday, but not for them.
All right.
So you just impart little things like that to them, or just when you're dealing with the Asians, to be very formal type of thing. Like actually a Swiss colleague of mine, we started some back and forth, and she already knew the guy, one of my salespeople here, and he would just shoot her stuff and say, I need this and I need this. And we were talking one day and she goes, he never asked me how I'm doing. And, he just jumps right in and asks, give me stuff. And so I know the guy pretty well. So I said, Brian, just as an aside, you don't have to do anything, but just be sensitive to things like that when, that the whole world definitely doesn't think how we think, and mm-hmm. just learn to adapt a little bit. So.
Very
interesting. That awareness of oneself and awareness of how others see you and see the world, really important.
Mm-hmm. And getting the feedback, as we know, feedback is a gift, yes. So
I thought it was your friend.
Well, it can be your friend, and it's a gift. But sometimes the wrapper isn't the right shade or something that you thought it would be, perhaps, right?
Yep.
So interesting. Yeah. What's the most surprising thing that you both learned about either yourselves or business overall as a result of pursuing this degree at this university?
Well, I'll jump into that. The thing that I really enjoyed was being around non-design professionals. Because I from freshman year in college, it was design and buildings and the environment and exterior spaces and all of those kinds of things. And just to see the business perspective from other business viewpoints was really helpful. And to have a fabulous team, I was really blessed and fortunate to have an extremely fabulous team. I think I won't say that.
Now, what was your team name?
Argensept.
Argensept, and the origination of that name, what is that?
Original.
The Silver Seven.
Silver Seven.
Silver Seven.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember the folks in your team, so give them a shout out while you have them here.
Argensept, hope you're doing great out there. Thinking about you guys, and we have to get together soon.
So that was Ira Ralph.
Ira Ralph and Rick Doherty and Chris Gober, Horace Jones, and Andy Martin.
Yeah, fantastic.
And they
stuff.
Were a wonderful group, and we really, from an academic standpoint and interpersonal standpoint, really helped one another through that program and did really well. I think that our cumulative team GPA. I wasn't going to say it, but I'll say it was like a 3.98.
Yeah, that was pretty strong.
Like that. It was pretty good.
It was pretty strong. Yeah. Y'all
were putting effort in.
We did.
No doubt about that.
We did. And we really had a great time doing it. Yeah. We really did. And secondly, just the relationships with the faculty and staff and our classmates on a broader level was really great. Like you said, Carrick, you can go back to lessons in leadership and see a lot of those great mm-hmm. people, and just you kind of get in step with them as though you were never gone. So
and for those that are listening, Lessons in Leadership is our yearly alumni event where we gather as an alumni, and I think this past February, it's always the last Thursday in February. And this past February, we had 526 or 527 RSVPs for that night.
It was full in there.
It's a panel discussion, yes. And it was full, moderated by our provost, Dr. Ken Harmon. And, of course, our dean, Dr. Kath Schwag, was there as well and actually hosted it for us. So a fantastic event. So tell us, Carrick, so what was the most surprising thing you learned either about yourself or business overall as a result of pursuing the degree at this university?
One of the things I think that helped me the most there, Alvin, was just that confidence it gets you to just stand up in front of people and pass that red face test, as the professors like to used to say, you know, as you get picked apart during your presentations. I think
so the end of semester presentations were key for you.
Yeah, but I mean, even just the day-to-day ones within class too. Right. The more you do that, and we had unfortunately kind of one weak link on our team there, and you know, kept trying to push that person, and you could just see it was too much of a challenge for them. And but you can see where something like that would hold you back, and that if you don't have that confidence to do that, and then like I said, team virtually. So, this morning I was on a call with, they were mostly in Texas, but, it's having to give a presentation to them, or it's kind of a pre-presentation, but, you have to have that confidence to keep driving it and, let them know this was, my thought process behind this. This is the end goal. When you can't see that feedback, you can't look somebody in the eye or, get the nods and the smiles and all that. You don't know if they're, surfing the internet and or, got you on mute and talking to something else, but this should be important to them, I would think.
Yeah.
But so it's, I would say the confidence that I took away. And then I would probably say, maybe surprise is the right word to have stayed as connected.
Okay.
And I think just,
you mean with your team as well?
Well, more with the program,
itself. Okay.
And a lot of the professor, like our course manager, I had lunch with him 2 weeks ago.
And who was that?
Larry Bell.
Larry Bell.
So
fantastic guy.
Oh, great.
Yep. So, he was a long-time AT&T executive.
Sure.
So have a connection there. He's, been somewhat of a mentor to me along the way. So we get together and chat and keep up with each other.
Good.
And just the, watching the progression of the program. Because the program itself looks at that feedback that you give every week or at the end of the semester. And you can see how they've acted upon that.
Yes.
And made those changes over the year to me, which is just phenomenal that they, they not only are willing to do that, every year, but or they say they're going to do it and they do it.
Right.
I think that's the critical component so that I can honestly tell people, if they ask you, is it worth it? I can assuredly say, yes, it's worth it. It's hard. It's not easy. You're not going to, you can't sugarcoat it.
You're not skating through this one, right?
No, definitely not. Especially, if you want to, have a good solid GPA, you got to put the work in.
You don't,
your team's not going to appreciate you.
Yeah.
It's set up very well. It's set up for you to be successful, to learn a lot, and hold yourself accountable, particularly that team aspect. Because there's so few things, there's not many jobs where you're not part of a team somehow, some way.
And that is the connectivity to why it's being done this way.
Yes, exactly.
Which makes total sense. And so the question I really wanted to focus in on was something that you said earlier, Carrick, and I think you alluded to it as well, Mark. It's the fact that this is not an easy program. And is it, in your opinion as well, that the reason why it's not easy is because that teaming aspect is there? I mean, it's not 100% individual between you and an instructor. You also have to work through people to drive home some pretty stout deliverables.
Oh, sure. And, that cuts both directions, in my view, Alvin, because they can be there to help you. In my case, I know that my teammates, we were all on board and oriented toward a common goal. If you don't have that, that could be a bit challenging. I think the support that one receives from one's business organization during the course of the program is really important, really, really important. as well as one's family commitment to all of that. I recall many evenings where there were four laptops flipped up on that kitchen table. Our kids were seniors in high school and a sophomore in high school at the time, and we were all doing our schoolwork. So
I think that's a great example, Mark, that you set for your kids, that you don't stop learning. You know, people would ask, you know, not that I was old when I did this, you know, early 30s or something when I started the program, but you know, for a lot of people think when they graduate from college, oh, I'm done.
Yeah. Right, right. You know, never done.
As we talked about a little earlier, you just can't have that mindset anymore. You've got to go out and keep learning again. Like when I went to get PMI certified, you have to study hard. It's a very challenging exam.
That's not an easy exam.
Yeah, a lot of people don't pass on the first try.
So you did that after the program.
I just did that. I did that 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yep.
So that kind of set the tone for other accomplishments and pursuits of other things that are available to us.
And success that you can kind of carry through
Absolutely.
In life, right? So when you talked about the support from the office, the support from your job, the support from your work, what kind of support should a candidate expect or really ask for if they don't expect it? What kind of support should they ask for with regard to what they should be doing at the office because now they're involved in this type of a program? Can you give us a flavor for that just at a high level?
Well, I think my situation maybe was a bit different because it was really a partnership of, you know, they wanting me to do this and me wanting me to do this.
Okay.
So that was
so
very
that's one
helpful.
Level.
That's
it probably helped that you're one of the senior people too.
Well,
I think that's probably challenging for some people
exactly.
aren't a senior executive.
No question. And I really wouldn't know what that looks like.
Okay.
I would be given where I am, I can empathize and understand that and would be absolutely willing and able to help a candidate through that program or any program, any kind of advanced educational academic pursuit to do what they want to do. I'm all in.
Yeah.
But it was time, it was stress, it was all of those things where it's that, you know, I know you've got this, go take care of it, and we can talk about this later, or, you know, whatever it may have been. So I have a great team at my workplace.
Yes.
Both above me, at my level, my peers, my direct reports, they're wonderful and could not have done that without all of their awareness and support.
Well,
as simple as that. Yeah. And my wife, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to have the home stuff. So, Carrick, I love the point that you brought up is the fact that he's senior enough at his firm to be able to drive a certain level of autonomy, perhaps, and being able to focus on what he needs to focus on during the day. So you and I had a little bit more of the same experience. Can you speak a little bit about what happens at that next layer, perhaps, where someone is trying to move up in an organization and they're seeing this as a way to be able to understand more about business, make themselves more marketable, kind of move up and position their career and their family in a little bit better position, a little bit better thoughts?
I know this is said in all the information sessions, and when I teach the project management class, I harp on it too, but you really do have takeaways from your class over the weekend that you can bring back to the office Monday morning.
Don't you love that? That's fabulous.
Like, you know, you sit there and make yourself notes. I can't wait to, you know, sit my team down and, you know, we're going to talk about X. So I think, you know, when you can start showing those little value adds every week or once a month and figure, you know, how you can get credit, so to speak, for those or document those. So if you have a boss that I don't know, maybe isn't as supporting as you would hope, or, you know, isn't trying to cut your workload a little bit to help you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're, you know, if they're going to keep dumping things on you, you know, in addition to your regular workload, you've got to be able to have those conversations with your bosses or, you know, whomever and say, you know, I'm doing this for you guys, you know, as well as my own career. I'm going to be more valuable to you.
And here's what I'm doing to bring you the value.
Right? Absolutely. Yep, definitely. So
there is some validity to some of that journaling that we had to do when we went through the program, right, folks?
Very helpful.
So if we can keep up with what it is we're doing and how we're bringing value to the company, even if it's through journaling or keeping some type of log or even sitting down with your boss or mentor or coach or whoever that is and saying, how do I articulate this to the people who really do have a say-so in what I have to do every day, then life seems a little less stressful.
Yes.
Especially when you're going through a program. Any master's degree program is obviously going to be stressful, no doubt about it.
And, you know, letting your boss know when, like, those end of semester presentations, say, look, you know, the week of April, whatever, I need
Here's what I've got going on.
You know, you may not see me as much. Is that okay? You know, if you've got a deliverable coming up, you know, can you speed it up or, you know, can we slide that a week? If you're just honest, you know, and have those conversations with people that, you know.
Yeah. And then so we've talked about what happens at the executive level. We talked about what happens at the mid-manager level. And then there's going to be some of those folks who actually are trying to move up to the mid-manager level that perhaps don't perceive support or have decided that they don't want to work with their, you know, their organizations to be able to help to either A, fund it or B, support it with time. Then it becomes a little bit more difficult, but still not impossible.
No.
Because we've still seen people who've done that.
And
the way they've done that is by planning on the personal side, making sure that their personal lives are a lot less stressful. And they may have been involved in 15 other things on the community side, but they've backed away from some of that, started to decrew, as it were, and started to look at some items that will position them for success in the classroom academically with this program. Have you noticed that as well?
Absolutely.
Examples of that?
And, you know, when coaching my team, current team, Silver Fox, you know, we try to have that dialogue at the beginning of every week or every weekly team meeting. What's going on? What's it like at work? Is home okay? You know, that kind of interpersonal touch point where you really check the dipstick. Are you here or are you worried about something that's really not in the room?
Right.
And looking to your teammates to help you out. We had a situation, I think it was the very last presentation, one of our teammates had a very serious personal situation. And we basically carried her through. You know, she didn't have to do a whole lot at the end of the day, but you know, it was the very end, and you know, we all just shouldered a little bit of the burden there and carried it across the finish line.
Because at some points during the program, the opposite has happened too. You know, everybody has had to be a little. You hope that it all evens out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'd like to say something about executive MBA programs and motherhood. And the women in our class absolutely get a hats off. They are heroines, I guess, heroes. They did yeoman's work. I mean, unbelievable that they were able to pay attention to their families and go through this program. And my hats off to all of them for their gumption and focus and great attitudes, quite frankly, through the whole thing. Because, you know, just being a parent and being a mom, the moms carry the day
exactly.
in my book.
Exactly.
You know, congratulations, ladies, to all of you.
Well, hear, hear.
I think that's sort of the net there, Alvin. No matter how you approach it, it can be done. You know,
That's what we try to tell people.
But there's enough people, you know, through the coaches and alumni for you to talk to people and, you know, let us help you set up yourself up for success.
Exactly. You know, you always have enough people to talk to, but at the end of the day, it's got to be your fortitude that carries the day. And so I notice a lot of people through their journeys on executive MBA program or just life in general take an approach of emotionality before they start thinking through what needs to happen next. And of course, if that's the way you think, that's the way you think. But at some points, you know, you'll get to a situation where if you want to move up in an organization, you perhaps need to really focus on the planning aspects, which is what I found to be a great takeaway from the executive MBA program. You know, we give you so much to do that you can't possibly do it on the teaming side by yourself, which is mm-hmm. why teaming is designed that way, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. the first thing. Yep. And secondarily, you know, you have to be vulnerable to be able to sit down and talk through things with people. And so I would imagine that the person you had to work with and carry in the last semester, Carrick, is someone where you understood what the issue happened mm-hmm. to be. And oh, yeah. you can't understand it if they don't tell it to you, right? Right. And yep. so the one thing we don't teach, we don't teach people how to read minds, and so that's not going to happen. So you've got to talk to people. So you gentlemen have both been very incredible with regard to helping us understand what's necessary and what you can actually expect when you go through a program like ours, what you can get from it, and how you can actually bring that back and utilize it in the workplace. So when you think through your leadership legacies, your individual legacies, what are you most proud of as leaders?
I would say for me, you know, as people have solicited feedback or having to give feedback about me, or when I've chose to leave a position, I've had a lot of people say, "Well, you're the best boss I ever had."
Wow!
You know, I know everyone won't say that out there. You know, we all can't be 100% perfect, but you know, I've had people cry when I left and just really be upset that I was moving on for whatever reason. And that made me feel really good, particularly when I'd gone into a situation and helped clean it up, per se, or mm-hmm. you know, gave it attention that it didn't have before. Because I think no matter – I like going into situations where it's in the ditch.
Right.
And I'd much rather do that and then take over something that's running perfectly, and everyone loves the guy or woman that was there before running it. And, you know, you have to come in and try to keep the bar that high. I'd rather say, all right, this is our plan to get up there.
There you go.
So I would say ultimately that's what I've prided myself on the most is, you know, just connecting with people. And as I tell them, you know, I'm just here to help you. You know, I get rid of the roadblocks. You know what you need to do. I give you the latitude that you need. And just, you know, you communicate with me, I'll do the same for you.
So. Perfect.
I think it's the communication acumen and being available to have conversations with people about just a variety of things. Mm-hmm. It could be technical. It could be team-oriented. It could be something completely outside of the work realm. And just to have that active listening and dialogue where you really do have some silences along the conversation and you both kind of get it, and there really is that awareness and understanding and connection. Oftentimes, someone isn't necessarily looking for a solution. You know, we want to try to – it's like, whoa, I can fix that. You know, that sounds really complicated.
No, it is hard not to do to learn to fix things. Yeah. My wife has taught me that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't have all the answers, yes, dear.
No. You know what? And I think that what we learned here is that the answer lies within the individual. If they're after answers, all we try to do is clarify and –
guide them to the realization. Yeah.
You know, let's stratify what you're seeing and feeling and observing here and try to, as you said, Kara, clear some of the roadblocks away. You know, and they could just be some mental perspective kinds of roadblocks, not even anything tangible necessarily, mm-hmm. but to have that active listening and be there when people kind of need you there. And there are times when you walk away from the office at the end of the day and you think, holy mackerel, what did I really do today? And you spiral back through and say, well, that was important at that time.
Yes.
So there's benefit to that.
Yes. Well, great, great. I appreciate that. And, you know, I've enjoyed our conversation such that I looked up and shucks, we're an hour and 20 minutes into this conversation. Actually, an hour and 10 minutes into our conversation, which is fantastic because the information y'all have shared, of course, I haven't had you both in the same room at one time. So I actually get a chance to enjoy your company here. And so we get to the second to last question that our listeners have grown accustomed to hearing me ask, and we are never accustomed to the answers that we sometimes get. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Unfortunately, I cannot think of the author's name, blanking, but the book is titled Jesus as CEO.
Ah, yes.
And kind of it's a short book. It's a pretty quick read. My faith is strong, and I think, you know, whatever you choose to believe, you know, I try to use some of those good fundamentals just in life and in general in dealing with people fairly and honestly, whether you're a believer or not. I think, you know, fundamentally as humans that we should have some core principles. But I thought this book was a very interesting take. You know, most people know the story of Jesus, but when you think about what he did and what he put together and how he managed them and through conflict and it's a very interesting read. I think, you know, like I said, if you're a believer or not, even I think it's a good story there. That, and I think that people come to the MBA program not necessarily thinking themselves as a leader, but you know, when you're in these team situations and you have to rise up because you're getting reviewed by your peers and your teammates and the professors and everything, that there's that opportunity to jump out and shine. So if you know. Can take that stretch, if you will, you know, look at a figure like Jesus that wouldn't necessarily be thought of as a, you know, running a corporation, but look what the church turned into, you know, when you think about it, for good or bad. But, you know, I think, you know, books like that will inspire you just to think a little bit differently. So that's my answer for you there, Alvin.
So that could be entrepreneurship at its base level. I mean, unbelievable. Go out and just do it and do it well.
Trust me.
That's great. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm going to get that, Carrick. I like that. I think that, and this was not a quick read at all by any stretch, was a Team of Rivals. The diversity and backgrounds of all of those gentlemen that served with and for and under Lincoln for the benefit of the entire nation at that time. And they all had their own idiosyncratic worldviews, and some were quite inwardly focused, and others were a little bit broader than that. But that team of men who assisted in guiding the country through its most calamitous crisis was a fabulous story of
Lincoln was ahead of the curve on the whole diversity.
Oh my gosh! You know, it was just—it's unbelievable. His interpersonal insight as to, you know, you talk about recognizing personalities and being able to get the person to do the right thing.
I think you knew exactly what he needed each of those people to do to be successful.
It was just a fabulous story. So, you know, that's sort of the board, the chairman and the board members at a very serious, tumultuous time. And, you know, was it perfect? Absolutely not. Was it better than it could ultimately have been? You bet it was.
Very good. Thank you. So, Mark and Carrick, on behalf of our learning community, I truly appreciate you for accepting the invitation to join us today. And I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future if we can work out our schedules. Is that a deal?
It's a deal. We'd love to, Alvin. It was a lot of fun, no doubt.
I'd be happy to, Alvin. No problem.
Well, fantastic. So with that in mind, the last question. Could you tell us how our learning community can contact you by email address or by phone and or by phone?
I would say probably the easiest way to connect with me is via LinkedIn. You know, I have a rather unique name, Kerick Shahan. I think I'm the only one in the United States, according to the White Pages.
So, interesting.
Not too hard to find me. That's really the best way to connect, and you can see the 500-plus people around the world that I'm connected with, too. So I'm happy to do that.
So I don't have that unique of a name because there are other Mark Kills out there.
No, I tried to find you. You were hard to find.
We're staying under a rock somewhere, I guess. But Mark Kill, MarkKill at Cooper, Carey, 2 R's in Carey.com.
Well, thank you. And with that response, we'll bring today's edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. We invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. And for those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the eMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect to us and sign up for an information session, which incidentally, gentlemen and listeners, it happens to be this coming Saturday. And then this coming Saturday is May 11th. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with passionate people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.